Wholesaling Studios, powered by RumbleOn.com. It's time to get all the info you need on the Vanderbilt Commodores. This is the Anchor Down Podcast with Vanderbilt reporter Max Hurd.
Yeah, that's a good way of putting it, Max.
On Nashville's best sports talk,
ESPN
102.5 The Game.
And the Game Nashville app.
It's time to anchor down and listen up to the Anchor Down Podcast here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. My name is Max Hurz. I'm your host. It is our Nashville Regional Preview episode. We will whip around and hear from all three teams that are visiting Hawkins Field this weekend for Vanderbilt's Regional. Commodores are the number four overall national seed. They will face Presbyterian College in their first ever NCAA baseball tournament game at 6 Central on Friday night at Hawkins Field to get Vanderbilt's portion of the regional going. The first game of the weekend is the 3-seed Indiana State against the 2-seed Georgia Tech. That is at noon Central on Friday, and it will be online on Watch ESPN on ESPN3. 2 years ago, we did the same thing. We heard from all three teams that were coming to Vandy's Regional in 2019. We had broadcasters and a media member last time. This year, we've got two broadcasters and a skipper. Our first interview up will be with Presbyterian head coach Elton Pollock, who I had a chance to meet in 2018 when the Blue Hose were here for a pair of midweek games right early in the season, early in the 2018 season. Tim Corbin started off his head coaching career at Presbyterian from 1988 to 1993, returning the program after it had been dormant and bringing them into NCAA Division II. They had never been in NCAA. They had been in NAIA. They moved up to Division I in 2008, and here they are in the NCAA Division I baseball tournament for the first time with one of Corbin's former players leading the way. And who do they play first? None other than Tim Corbin himself. So we'll hear from Elton Pollock first to start things off. Then we'll hear from broadcasters in each of our 2 and 3 seeds. First up, we'll hear from Luke Martin, who is Indiana State's radio broadcaster. Luke was on 2 years ago when Indiana State was the 2-seed here in Nashville. This year they are the 3, and we will have Wiley Ballard from Georgia Tech, their broadcaster. The Jackets are the 2-seed and feature a couple of former Vandy boys, and it'll be Georgia Tech and Indiana State in that 2-3 matchup. Vandy will play at least one of them. It certainly has a chance to play both of them, depending how things fall. So we'll hear from Wiley and Luke in our second and third interviews of the show today. If you're looking for a specific interview of those three, the timestamps in terms of when each interview is in the podcast are in the episode description. So if you want to skip to one, just check out the description. It will list the time when all three interview guests come up. Before we hear from Coach Pollock and Presbyterian to get us started, a couple of thoughts on the regional coming from me. First off, ever since Carter Young got hurt 2.5 weeks ago, dislocated his shoulder against Florida International, sliding into second base headfirst on a steal attempt. Everything Vanderbilt has said kind of made it like, we want to get him back for the regional unless there's something that holds him out. And it seems like he should be good to go. Tim Corbin said earlier this week right here on 102.5 The Game that they're hopeful that Carter Young can play. And of course, Carter Young wants to play, no surprise, but I think Young will play. I think they'll give it a shot. Obviously, there are backup plans if he isn't, with Tate Colwick at shortstop, Noland at second, probably Jason Gonzalez at third, but seems like Carter Young is going to be able to give it a shot based on really what Vanderbilt has said from the beginning. So I think he will play, and I think that'll be a big return for Vanderbilt, obviously both on offense and defense. We'll see if that left shoulder injury is at all limiting to him. I'm not sure if offense or defense would be limited more. I mean, you can think of scenarios where it could limit him on both sides, but depending exactly what he's doing, maybe it doesn't limit him at all. It's on his glove hand. He is a switch hitter, so not sure if it would hurt him more hitting right-handed or left-handed, but it seems like Carter Young could give it a go based on everything Vandy has said since he got hurt, and that he could have played late-inning defense or even some late-inning hitting in the SEC tournament was what Tim Corbin said earlier this week here on 102.5 The Game. So that is promising for Carter Young to get in these games for Vandy, and of course the Commodores want him if he's able, but I don't think they should push it. I think if there's any chance of further injury, then no go. But I think if that were the case, I don't think he would play. My other thought on the regional, and this will present itself as we hear from both Wiley Ballard and Luke Martin in our broadcaster interviews for Indiana State and Georgia Tech. If you're a Vanderbilt fan, you should be rooting hard for Indiana State to win the first game. And it's not just because they're the lower seed. The strengths of these two teams are very obvious. Georgia Tech, when they're on, is one of the best offenses in the country. Their pitching staff has been inconsistent. Their rotation isn't even fully set, with freshman Marquise Grissom Jr. trying to break his way in, coming back from injury. They are an offense-first team. Well, they're going to be going up against the best pitcher in the regional, who is not on Vanderbilt's team, Indiana State lefty Jeremy Guerrero, fifth-year senior in game number one. Guerrero has been the star for Indiana State this season, and they're a three this year. They were a 2-2 years ago. I mean, this is a team that, on paper, they didn't win the conference tournament, which they did in 2019. On paper, this team is worse than the last one that came into Vanderbilt. But the exception has been Jeremy Guerrero, who has just gone out and shoved, and Luke Martin will talk about him. The best-case scenario for Vandy, Jeremy Guerrero goes out. He throws eight innings or a complete game against Georgia Tech, finds a way to shut him down. Indiana State moves on. Vanderbilt beats Presbyterian, and then it would be Vandy and Indiana State. And all of a sudden, if you keep winning, Georgia Tech's got to go through a pretty rough patch in the loser's bracket, beating Presbyterian and then beating potentially Indiana State again to even get back to you if you win twice. Georgia Tech's lineup is tough. They would be a tough matchup for Jack Leiter in game number two. So obviously, they would be a tough matchup for Jeremy Guerrero as well. But I think Guerrero is Indiana State's strength, and their strongest player, their strongest piece of anything on that roster, has a real chance to shut him down. So if you're a Vanderbilt fan and you want Vanderbilt to win this regional as easily as they can and get through it, it would be a big help if Indiana State beats Georgia Tech 3-seed over 2-seed on Friday afternoon. And I think it's reasonable. I really do think it's reasonable. Guerrero, a fifth-year senior, has been one of the best pitchers in the country this year out of absolutely nowhere. And again, you'll hear more from Luke Martin about him. So that's what I think Vanderbilt fans should want. I think this is a very reasonable draw for Vandy. I think Vandy, no matter who it was, would be favored to win the regional. But I think Vandy should be a rather heavy favorite to come out of this regional. And I like their potential super regional draws as well. But we will save that for a potential next week podcast. We won't get too far ahead of ourselves here. Still got three teams to hear from. Elton Pollock is the head coach of Presbyterian College in his 17th season as the head man from Clinton, South Carolina. They've only had three head coaches since the program was reinstated by Tim Corbin in 1998. Tim Corbin, 88 through 93, excuse me. Eric Kovash from 93 up until Pollock took over, starting in the 2008 season as they made the jump to Division I. I got a chance to interview Coach Pollock for the first time when Presbyterian played Vanderbilt and lost a couple of lopsided ones in February of 2018 and the first midweek set of the year. It was very gracious of Tim Corbin to have them in as a not-so-close opponent, and they came in for a Tuesday and Wednesday game. Vanderbilt won both of those. But I got to talk to Coach Pollock before those games, and this is what Coach Pollock said about Tim Corbin back in 2018.
I mean, I think it's hard to put it into words, to be honest. I think the jersey in his office probably says it all, to be honest. He has had a very lasting effect on me personally, but also to all of the guys who came through back in the 80s and who still keep in touch with him today throughout his successes here at Vandy. But he is he's kind of a mentor, kind of the godfather, if you will, if you want to put it that way. But a lot of toughness he brought from the Northeast down to that area in Clinton, South Carolina, and, you know, kind of left an imprint for sure. And his work ethic and his ability to recruit, obviously, which landed him at Clemson and then on to Vandy. But, I just think the track record speaks for itself and the pathway speaks for itself for sure.
Either at any point in your season or specifically coming into these games, do you tell your players at all about his connections with the program and what you think they mean?
Yeah, for sure. That's one of the things that we'll talk about right before we take our batting practice as we get ready to get started, just to lay a little bit of a foundation. I mean, they a lot of our guys, not our freshmen, of course, but as we played Auburn last year, the coach that that came after, Doug Kovacs, that came after Coach Corbin, was able to make it to one of our games at Auburn and Alabama, as a matter of fact. So got a chance to get him in front of the team, and it was really special at that time. So absolutely, the history of the program means everything to me. I mean, I wouldn't be here without that history, especially having been recruited by Coach Corbin at PC. And so I owe him a lot on that side of things, as he's taught me a lot about the game and being a man and all that good stuff. So I owe a lot to both he and Coach Kovacs, and you know, our guys will definitely get an earful of what that means to me, for sure.
He's the godfather, and he talked to his team about it then. Plenty of those players are still on the ball club, and Vandy's still got some guys who were there too. The Vandy seniors were freshmen on that team. Hugh Fisher made his college debut the day that Elton Pollock gave me that answer. So here we are 3 years later, Presbyterian is finally in, and who does PC face in their first D1 NCAA baseball tournament game ever? Tim Corbin. A man who knows him well, Elton Pollock.
Coach Pollock, thanks so much for doing this. Congratulations on a great year.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
You guys are in a regional for the first time ever. What does it mean to be here?
Well, I think it means a lot as you start to look over the history of the program, and just really excited for our guys and, you know, all the guys that have played in the program before, all the guys that have coached in the program before, and we're just trying to make sure we do them proud, and just happy for these guys that they have really been on a run here lately, and we're able to pull it out, play our way into the tournament, and then play our way through the tournament. So I'm excited for everything that they've done.
When you guys get in and you're looking at who the one seeds could be with you guys as a possible four seed, are you thinking, hey, we might go to Vandy, we might see Coach Corbin?
I did think that initially, you know, and but there were so many different, you know, scenarios, and just trying to figure out exactly what was going to be what, you know, it wasn't up to me, so I wasn't worried about it, but I always knew in the back of my mind that it was a possibility.
Coach Corbin always says, we love our friends, we don't always want to play against them, talking about Michigan, Oklahoma State, some of the guys who used to coach here. Do you kind of feel the same way, like you want to play them, but you don't want somebody to have to lose?
Oh, no question, you know, I mean, and somebody has to, but we're gonna approach the game as we always do, with every intent to win the baseball game, so, and I know he'll be no different on the other end of that.
We saw your team here early in the 2018 season. Looking back to that point, what strides has the program made from then to now to get to this point?
Well, I mean, it's been a little up and down. I mean, that was 2018 was a tougher year for us. I mean, we had some veteran guys, and we had hoped that that the leadership would have been kind of what this leadership has been for this club. But we struggled through a little bit in that year, rebounded well in 2019, made it back to the conference tournament, and, you know, with some guys that were just gutsy, you know. And then in 2020, obviously everything that happened in 2020 was tough on everyone. But at the same time, we feel like our leadership this year, in particular, the two seniors that are our captains this year, have led us in the right direction, set a great foundation as we get ready to move forward.
What's most meaningful to you about the fact that since Tim Corbin took over this program in 1988, you're just the third head coach?
Well, and I played for both of them. You know, I played for Coach Corbin for his last 2 years, and then I played for Coach Kovacs in his first 2 years at Presbyterian. So that's pretty special, not to mention still having the relationship I do with both of them, because they're both great mentors in my life. So it means the world to me, and obviously, as I've mentioned before, Coach Corbin, someone when I played for him that you just didn't want to disappoint. And the same with Coach Kovacs, and them being really locked in to my life, you know, from various aspects, whether it be, you know, mentally, physically, spiritually, all of those things, they pour into me, and I'm just grateful for the opportunity.
You told your 2018 team about who Tim Corbin was and what he meant to you when you guys played here. What do you tell this team when you do it in a postseason setting?
Well, they know. I mean, you know, I've expressed that to them. They know the roots of where I come from, and you know, a little bit of the history behind the program in general, which definitely includes Coach Corbin. So I try to relay those things, but not to paint a picture that puts them in awe in any amount. You know, I want them to stay level-headed and grounded in the opportunity so that we can continue to play baseball in the way that we have.
Expecting to see lefty Charlie McDaniel in game number one, what has he done as a freshman to earn a weekend rotation spot, and how do you think he matches up against Vandy?
Well, you just said it. He earned a weekend spot. I mean, through his hard work and dedication in the fall and early spring, and I mean really standing out through his work, being invested in the process, it really gave us the confidence to really, you know, give him the nod. And he's done everything else, just to be totally honest. He works his tail off, and he's got an unwavering confidence that you don't see in many freshmen. So excited for him, kind of a quote-unquote homecoming through his family here in Nashville. But, you know, he's earned everything that he's gotten.
Coach, thanks again for doing this. Looking forward to seeing your guys play.
Appreciate that.
That's Elton Pollock, Presbyterian College baseball coach, previewing the matchup with Vanderbilt and talking about Tim Corbin. Thanks so much to Coach Pollock for joining me. Got to do that interview in person, too, which was great. Got to do our first Vanderbilt in-person interviews earlier this week. So good that we're getting back to normal on that front. And I want to give a special thank you to PC Baseball SID Greg Hartledge for making that interview happen on Presbyterian's warm-up day on Thursday afternoon here in Nashville. So thanks so much to Coach Pollock for joining me. The head coach of a team in a regional does not have an obligation to join a media member who covers one of the teams they're going to be playing. So again, exceptionally kind of both Coach Pollock and Greg to make that interview a reality. All right, that's who Vanderbilt will play first. Who are they going to play second? We got Indiana State and Georgia Tech. Let's talk to Indiana State broadcaster Luke Martin, who was on the podcast 2 years ago when the Sycamores were here as the 2 seed after they came down in the regular season. Trio of recent regular season meetings, one series that ended up being a neutral site weather reschedule down in Tampa in 2015, and then a couple of midweeks since then. Commodores would have loved to have Indiana State on the schedule this year, but as you'll hear from Luke, they only played conference games from the first week of April on. So normally they're an April or May midweek team down in Nashville, and that's the type of team that Tim Corbin says every year after that game, I'm so glad we got that team here because that's the type of team we're going to play in a regional. And then, what do you know, in 2019, they are the team they play in the regional. So they're back this year. Vanderbilt beat them twice in the 1-0 game and then in game 6 to sweep the regional in 2019. So for the second time, Luke Martin, Indiana State baseball broadcaster, is on the Anchor Down podcast. Second straight Nashville regional that Luke Martin's on with us to talk about the Sycamores. Luke, great to talk to you again. Thanks for joining us.
Well, you know, Max, we were just joking, man. It's starting to become a yearly tradition, you and I getting on here and talking. But yes, you know, Indiana State's excited, especially, you know, where in 2019 they didn't need a committee to put them in because they earned the automatic berth and was able to beat Dallas Baptist twice in the conference tournament final in 2019. And that was a team that won 40-plus games. This year, it's a much younger team and a much different team that Commodore fans are going to see. But it's a group that they are ahead of schedule for being a young team. And to get back into the tournament, they didn't care where they went. They just wanted to get in and now go play.
What would you say is the story beyond just the youth of this year's Indiana State team, getting to 14-10 in conference play, getting to the MVC finals?
Well, the story's been Jeremy Guerrero, our Friday night starter this year, who had 2 career wins prior. His career long prior to this year was just going 5 innings. And what did Jeremy Guerrero do this year? Well, he was the Valley Pitcher of the Year. He won a career record 10 games. His record is 10-1 this year on Friday nights. And how important has Jeremy Guerrero been to Indiana State? Well, you look at the overall record for Indiana State, 30-19 heading into this regional. When Jeremy Guerrero starts a game, Indiana State is 12-2. When he doesn't, they are 18-18. I think that really shows how important Jeremy Guerrero has been to this team. He's not going to wow you with a radar gun. His fastball always sits maybe around 89-90. He's not going to blow it by you like some guys maybe in a Vanderbilt Commodore uniform this weekend. But Jeremy mixes all of his pitches. He can throw all of his pitches for strikes, and he just sets the tone. And Coach Hannes is big on setting the tone. And he really felt that Jeremy in the conference tournament going a complete game against Illinois State, he not only set that tone, but he found another gear. And I joked with Jeremy this week. He said, hey, it's kind of like you went the fifth gear last week. Do you have a sixth gear? And he's like, yeah, I think I got a sixth gear and ready to go. Guerrero's been the story, and I hate to single out just one guy, but I think the numbers and the stats and all of that points to that. It's been Jeremy Guerrero who has really, from the get-go, a start against Pittsburgh to start out the year in that shutout win with the help of Connor Finlong on the back end. That ever since then, it's been Guerrero's show, and he's really willed this Indiana State team with his experience. He was on that 2019 team just mostly as a midweek starter and bullpen guy to now being the ace of the staff.
What was the sense you were getting, Luke, in maybe January and early February about Guerrero and not only becoming a starter, but whether or not something like this was possible?
To be honest, there wasn't much. I mean, everybody knew that Jeremy is the epitome of what you want in your program. And Coach Hannes told me when I asked him, I was like, hey, you know, what was the biggest difference with Jeremy this year? And he's like, Luke, you can never underestimate when a guy has a huge chip on his shoulder and something to prove.
I love that.
And, you know, and Jeremy is a guy who has been had a good career. He was a good midweek starter. He was really solid out of the bullpen. He was a utility knife type guy. But he himself wanted more. He was not just satisfied with that being his career. And last year he thought his career was over. You know, he didn't know if the NCAA would grant another year. And he's not a guy with a, you know, an MLB draft profile a year ago. So he thought baseball was done. And when the NCAA granted another year, when all the communication went that you were going to be able to come back and play, I think that extra year of knowing baseball is back and almost a surprise that it was back really alleviated all the stress for Jeremy, and he could just come back and just work on playing. And every inning he gets is just like icing on the cake because he didn't know he would get it. And I think you've seen some other guys on Indiana State that maybe had that draft profile and had that pressure and had that year off and come back and maybe haven't been necessarily as strong. So Jeremy's had stress-free. Jeremy probably tell you maybe there's been some stressful moments this year, but he's acted. You watch him pitch, you have no idea how he's feeling. And I think that's why the emotion and how he handles himself on the mound has really affected his very young team.
How do you think he matches up against Georgia Tech's lineup?
Well, the good news is Georgia Tech is a team that can hit it. I know that may not sound like a very optimistic thing, but Indiana State this year has really struggled against teams that can pitch it. And when their offense isn't going, it can be a struggle. But the good news is, from an Indiana State perspective, I like that you have your Friday night ace and Jeremy Guerrero going up against a team where their biggest strength is their offense. Because so far this year, Guerrero has been dynamic, and there's not been too many teams that can get to him. And right now he is on pace to just absolutely shatter our school record in terms of walks allowed per nine innings. Right now he's only at 1.25. Our school record is 1.47. He just doesn't allow any free bases. I think he's hit one guy all year long. He's got no wild pitches. He is going to throw strikes. Now, from the opposite side of that, Georgia Tech and the Yellow Jackets are going to have pitches to hit, but if Jeremy can keep them off balance, if he can mix those pitches like he's done all year, I really like the matchup from an Indiana State perspective. It doesn't worry me too much, but if it was the opposite effect, if Georgia Tech was a team that could pitch it, if Georgia Tech was a team that can defensively be very strong consistently, which are the two areas that they really struggled in this year to do that consistently, obviously they have a lot of talent and are going to be a very difficult first game for Indiana State. But with the way the Yellow Jackets are built, I kind of like it from an Indiana State perspective if you're an Indiana State fan because, hey, you're going to have Jeremy Guerrero towing that rubber, and every time Guerrero's towed that rubber outside of one time against DBU earlier this year, you've come out on the winning side.
Agreed. Luke Martin's our guest, Indiana State baseball broadcaster, as the Six come back here for their second consecutive regional. And by the way, it's the first time they've been in back-to-back regionals since the 80s, and here they are in Nashville for the second college baseball postseason in a row. Luke, you've talked about the Valley a couple of times. Dallas Baptist won the league regular season and tournament championship. They are in. Indiana State makes it a two-bid league once again this year as a three seed. four-game conference weekend series, and sadly no midweek between Vandy and Indiana State as we had had the previous two full seasons because the Valley played conference games only from that first week of April on. What was that like for you and the team?
Well, I'll tell you what, it got you prepared for a conference tournament, you know, because most of the time when you go on a three-game weekend series, you know, obviously if you pitch it well, you know, you may not really get deep into your bullpen. Well, when you play four games and on a Saturday you have a doubleheader with a seven-inning game being first, followed by a nine-inning game, man, you're going to find out what you have pitching-wise very, very quickly. And for Indiana State, I think it has set them well up for a conference tournament. That's why they had success. And even when they got sent to the loser's side of the bracket after losing the Southern, after losing the DBU on Saturday of the conference tournament and had to beat Southern Illinois again for the second time, the host school that hosted the conference tournament, there wasn't much nervousness. Indiana State has really had to kind of do a patching job with their pitching over about the last week of the season after Jeremy Guerrero. It's been great with Guerrero on Fridays. It's kind of been a patch job the rest of the weekend, which will be interesting where Indiana State will be and why that first game is so important. But, man, it was taxing, Max. It was a year that you just didn't know really what to expect. Being able to get weekend sweeps, of course, were much more difficult. The Valley this year was very top-heavy. DBU won the league by four games. Everybody played different amount of games because we lost four games to Bradley, Missouri State, and DBU didn't play because of a positive test in the DBU program. So you had teams that played, you know, all 28 games, and you had some teams that played 24 games. It was just a weird year, and I'm sure it was weird for everybody, but the one positive, even though the coaches probably won't say there were too many positives from playing a four-game series on a weekend with no midweeks, was the fact that you were going to be set up for a conference tournament and a regional, and you were going to put guys that were going to pitch in high-leverage situations that even with midweek games and even with a three-game series that maybe wouldn't have been in those positions before.
Talking pitching, how would you expect starters line up this weekend, relievers, all hands on deck, however you think it may go?
Well, yeah, the first game's a no-doubter. I mean, you're going to see Jeremy Guerrero from Friday night, and I would expect, you know, probably a second game start would be Zach Fry. And Zach Fry is a guy that Vanderbilt fans will remember. He started our regional final against Vanderbilt back in 2019. And the reason Coach Hannes has gone to Zach Fry mostly after Jeremy Guerrero is he says, I want mentality over stuff this time of year. And Fry is a guy that, again, maybe won't wow you with his stuff. He's going to give up some home runs. He's going to give up some big hits. But, man, he is going to fight you. And he's not going to be afraid of that moment. He's going to toe that rubber. He's going to throw strikes. He's not going to walk his first three, you know, and get nervous and not throw strike. I mean, he's going to come at you. He's not afraid of whatever the name is on the opposing jersey. I would be very surprised if Zach Fry maybe doesn't start maybe a second game. You know, Connor Klein has been a guy that's been hurt kind of towards the end of the year, hasn't pitched a ton towards the end. He came in with his longest relief outing against Southern Illinois, not Southern Illinois, against DBU, in the conference tournament just over the weekend on Sunday. I think he could be maybe somebody you will see, but like I said, it's been a patch job for Indiana State for most of the year down the stretch. Javon Drake had his best outing of the year, one of his best outings of the year against Tennessee. He went four innings, only allowed four hits, struck out seven, only walked three on a day where Indiana State swept a doubleheader against the Volunteers. So they have talented arms. It's just, each of those arms have really been different as the years go along. I would say the biggest positive for Indiana State, along with Connor Finlong, who's been our main closer for the year, Tyler Grauer was that closer in 2019, but he kind of lost his job. And over the last week, he's gotten two saves. He has been pitching his best baseball of the year. I really think Indiana State, with Grauer and Finlong on the back end, feel very confident about their late game situations. But an injury to Cam Edmondson, who was kind of the setup man early on this year, another lefty arm, Cam got hurt, and he's been out for the majority of this year, I think since after about mid-March. And that would be a bullet that Coach Hannes really wants in that bullpen But outside of that, it is a bullpen that is wide open. There's going to be many different arms you will see. Matt Jasek has pitched really well here down the stretch in middle relief. But in terms of what the rotation, the starting rotation is going to look like, I can tell you Jeremy Guerrero is going to go game one. And then from that point on, fasten your seatbelt, Max, because it could be about as many different guys as you could possibly imagine.
Let's finish up talking a little bit of offense then. Another fifth-year senior like Jeremy Guerrero, Max Wright, is 23 years old, been catching, hitting in that three-hole in the lineup. His OPS is well over 1,000. He's been walking like crazy. 16 homers, way more than his first four seasons combined. What's taken him to another level this year?
He's old. You know, Max is just, and he's an academic All-American. He's a smart kid. You know, GPA 4.0, all that stuff. And I think to your point, he is the guy that's been kind of steadying the ship, you know, along with Jeremy. He's been that basically everyday starter for Indiana State. I think what's helped Max is Grant McGill. Grant McGill, who's been the backup catcher this year. I believe the year was 2018. It's when Max was no longer a freshman and kind of his first year starting. And I think out of the 48 games that year, he started 47 at catcher. And there just wasn't a really good backup option for Max. And this year, Grant McGill has been more than respectable defensively, and he's actually provided some big offensive hits down the stretch for Indiana State. But Grant's been able to give Max rest, and that's why you see his offensive numbers increase. It's because early on in his career, his numbers in February and March were great, and he was on pace to really have numbers like he has now. But he got wore down, and he would catch doubleheaders. He would catch every game. Now he doesn't have to do that, and that's why you've seen his numbers just be steady. And it's just been so fun to see this year for Max. His mom, Michelle, drove from Toronto, Ontario to Terre Haute and then Terre Haute to Dallas to watch her son play this year. Just to give you a perspective, that's 12 hours to Terre Haute, that's 12 hours to Dallas. That's 24 hours in a car. His family has been very supportive of him from just up north of the border. He's loved his time at Indiana State. He's been a five-year guy, as you mentioned. He didn't transfer in. I think that's what's been so rewarding, is to see a guy like Max who came in as a freshman. Tyra Ward, who did TV broadcast with me this year, said Max was so bad as a freshman, he didn't want him to even catch his bullpen. So, I mean, he went from a guy that guys didn't even want him to catch their bullpens, let alone games, to now, no doubt, being really the heart and soul of the team from an offensive perspective and also defensive perspective when he's catching there behind the plate.
Wow. And last question for you, Luke. You mentioned that there's been depth at catcher and at other positions. 13 different position players started 20 or more games this year. What's it been like for the Sycamores trying to find their starting lineup? How did some of those guys break in, and what have they done well to stay in?
It's been an issue. I should say an issue. Issue makes it more of a, you know, kind of gives a bad kind of vibe with that. Back in 19, you knew who the defensive alignment was going to be. You know, you had Jake Means, the defensive player of the year at third. You had Clay Dungan, who started virtually every game for 4 years at shortstop. You had Jared Watkins in his 2 years since he transferred in. He started every game at second base. You had Max, of course, catching. And in the outfield, you had the ever-reliable C.J. Huntley in left, Luke Fagan and Robbie Enriquez for their 2 years in the program, virtually start every game at center and right, respectively. This year, it's been Jordan Schaefer at short every game. Josue Urdaneta has started all but one game at second base, and Max Wright behind the plate with Grant McGill. Everywhere else, it's kind of been open season. Miguel Rivera and Brian Fuentes have switched off and on at first. Dom Cusimano, Diego Jimenez, Mike Sears has kind of been that revolving door at third. In left, Aaron Beck, who was the Valley newcomer of the year, didn't start early on, got started against Illinois State in the opening weekend of Valley play, and he has been there ever since. And he has earned that job and got Valley player of the year. He nearly hit 400 in league play, just underneath 400 at 391. He had a weekend where against Valpo, not the best of competition, of course, but he went 12 of 14 from the plate. He's a guy that can heat up in a hurry. His dad, Glenn Beck, actually played left field as well for East Carolina back in the day. And, of course, this regional is paired up with ECU, whoever the advance is for. So imagine that storyline.
Yeah.
Left fielder Aaron Beck can maybe find a way to go up against his dad's alma mater. But then in center field, Sean Ross, he had as many hits in the Valley tournament as he had all Valley regular season. He is a very good defensive player for Indiana State, but his bat was cold. Luckily, heading into the tournament, the Valley tournament, he was able to heat up again. He's kind of been primarily there in center field. But Ellison Hanna and Wright, defensively is where he struggles, but every time he swings, you just feel it's going to leave the park. He has a very powerful swing. He had 3 home runs in the Valley tournament. He had 2 home runs all year. He hit just below 400 as well in Valley games this year at 391. It's been his plate discipline. His walks are higher. His strikeouts are lower. Shocker, when those happen, you're going to get into the lineup more free. But, man, his defense, he can be a defensive liability at times, Darren Wright. His defensive ability just isn't as high as where it was for Robbie Enriquez. So to answer your question, Indiana State defensively this year is not as strong as they were in 2019. Mm-hmm. But they do have guys that can swing a bat a little bit more and have a little bit more success in that regard. But still, it's a group that is young, that hasn't necessarily been on this stage outside of those main guys we talked about earlier with the Max Ryan and Jeremy Guerrero and Tyler Grauer, who pitched it back in that 19 regional. It's going to be fun to see how these guys respond to this biggest stage, and I'm just glad it's 100% capacity. Should be a great crowd in Nashville this weekend. This is what college baseball is all about, and these guys this year were early on. There weren't many people watching them. Now to hopefully have this 100% capacity and be back to, I hate to use this word because I feel like we use it so much, but to be back to normal.
Yeah, Matt, use it.
This is what everybody wants, and this is what everybody strives for. And all year long, if you weren't ready for this moment, if you weren't working hard to get to this moment, then you shouldn't have been here. And I think Indiana State's ready for the moment. We'll see what happens when these games start up. You play the games for a reason and get it going against Georgia Tech at 1 o'clock on Friday.
Luke, looking forward to having you back in the booth at the Hawk. Thanks so much for doing this.
Thanks, Max. I appreciate it. And hopefully we can look forward to an Indiana State-Vanderbilt matchup on Saturday night.
Thanks so much to Luke Martin, Indiana State baseball broadcaster, for joining me on the Anchor Down podcast for the second time as the Six come back to Nashville. You can follow him on Twitter at @LukePMartin. So follow Luke. He tweets about Indiana State baseball and Indiana State athletics all year. I am much better informed on Indiana State coming into this regional because I follow Luke, and even more so now because we got a chance to talk to him. But should be an interesting team. And like I said earlier, it is in Vanderbilt's best interest if Jeremy Guerrero comes out and shoves on Friday. Who knows if there's any chance he could come back later in the regional? I don't really know if that would be in play or not. And I didn't really want to put Luke on the spot with it either. If he throws 100 pitches Friday, is he coming back Sunday or Monday? The broadcaster isn't going to make that decision. And they haven't had any reason to make a decision like that yet. But if Guerrero can shut down Georgia Tech, and Luke made it seem like that matchup is reasonable from the Indiana State perspective, there's a chance that Vandy never has to face Georgia Tech, who arguably has the best lineup in the regional, maybe even better than Vanderbilt's. Let's hear about the Yellow Jackets, the Ramblin' Wreck coming up from Georgia Tech. Wiley Ballard is their broadcaster. He's going to tell us about that great lineup. They're not as great pitching rotation, and they're 2 Vandy boys transfers on the roster, starting third baseman Justin Henry Malloy and relief pitcher Chance Huff. Wiley Ballard talking Georgia Tech baseball heading into the Nashville Regional. Wiley Ballard's on to talk some Georgia Tech baseball. Wiley, thanks so much for joining the podcast.
Oh, by all means, Max. I appreciate you having me. I'm looking forward to getting to Nashville for this regional.
Georgia Tech's gotten a lot of love all year, some great offensive numbers, won their division in the ACC, got to the tournament semifinals. What would you say has been the story of the Jackets' season?
Well, I think the story has been, I mean, and you touched on it, they got a lot of love early. After sweeping NC State and taking 2 of 3 from Louisville in the first month of the season, they were a top 10 team. And then they kind of hit a swoon in the month of April, and they've kind of bounced back here in May. They've had four walk-off wins in May going into June. So I think the story in my mind has kind of been it's a younger group, especially offensively. They got out to a great start in that first month and then kind of took their lumps, had some growing and some maturing to do. And I think in the last month or so, they've kind of turned around and back on the up. And, you know, I won't say they're playing their absolute best baseball, although I might have said that going into the ACC tournament. They struggled there in the ACC tournament, obviously made the semifinals, but I think there were some things they would like to have done better last week in Charlotte. So, you know, I'll say that they're trending in the right direction. And, again, I think it's a group that has grown a lot since February.
With all you said about the downturns they had in March and a little bit of April, is a 2 seed a big win for this group when you look big picture?
Oh, it's funny. I think you could get a variety of answers. I think if you talk to some of the people within the program in the ACC, this is the first time since the ACC split into divisions, which was 2006, it is the first time that a ACC division has not had a single 1 seed. In fact, the Coastal Champion, which is Tech Division, has been a 1 seed in every NCAA tournament
wow.
since 2006. So, you know, I think there'd be a little bit of clenched teeth saying, hey, you know, we won our division, and every year prior it's been good enough to get a 1 seed. So, now, with that said, this year's obviously different. Obviously, the ACC, with their scheduling format, you know, kind of made their bed when it came to RPI and things were going to be tough. And so I don't think anybody on the committee would tell you that Tech should have been a 1 seed at RPI in the low 40s. And really, more importantly, I mean, just there were some non-conference slip-ups. And, you know, they won their division by half a game. So I wouldn't say it was a 1 seed resume beyond the Coastal Division title. So on one hand, I think, you know, some people might say, well, I think Tech deserved a better fate. On the other hand, honestly, I think if you had told the Georgia Tech fans that you would get a 2 seed on, you know, opening day of February, I'd say that's a big win, you know, because mm-hmm. I think the big number that jumped out to me going into this season was that as a roster, Georgia Tech had only 3 hitters with more than 70 plate appearances
wow.
at the college level. And you look at their lineup, and they've got 6 freshmen who are day-in, day-out starters. Now, 4 of those are second-year COVID freshmen, but keep in mind, they, you know, only got a month worth of baseball last spring,
right.
and you've got a couple of true freshmen in there as well. So I think all things considered, from where I sit, I think the 2 seed's a pretty good accomplishment, especially considering some of the hurdles that, of course, everybody faced over the last year, but then the inexperience that this team brought to the field this year. I think it's something to be very proud of, especially the way they finished winning 7 of the last 10 in the regular season.
Talking Georgia Tech baseball with their broadcaster Wiley Ballard as the Jackets come up as the number 2 seed in Vanderbilt's regional this weekend. You mentioned the lineup and how much youth there is there, freshmen, COVID redshirt freshmen who are true sophomores. Who from that lineup, like if you're looking at the lineup that has been filled out this last month or so, who from that lineup would you have expected to be there? Who wouldn't you have expected to be there? And what have those shifts been like throughout the season?
That's a good question. And I think the big change obviously is Coach Danny Hall. His son Colin was expected to be the starting center fielder, and he's played only 1 game since March 20th. So that's an injury situation. He just hasn't been mm-hmm. able to get healthy. So that's been somewhat of a surprise. And I think, again, I think Jake DeLeo and Steven Reed, who are hitting the corners, I think they still would have had a chance to start. So I'm not sure anybody in there is truly a surprise, as if you had told me that, hey, at the end of the season, this guy's going to be in the lineup. I think it's somewhat what they expected. I think the story with the lineup this year, and Andrew Jenkins, who obviously had the walk-off hit against Louisville last week in the ACC tournament and is hitting about .350 since mid-April, he's taken a circuitous route to where he's hitting the lineup now, hitting 5th. On opening weekend, again, he's a second-year freshman. He was hitting in the 3-hole for Tech on opening weekend. And by the season's 3rd week, he was hitting the 9-hole or not hitting at all. He got off to a really tough start, and this was a Tech team that felt like they had about 11 or 12 hitters that had a candidate or were candidates to be in the starting 9. So he kind of lost his spot. Earned it back with some good work defensively at first, where there was a need about middle of the season. and then he has taken that chance and run with it. So in some ways, I think the story of Andrew Jenkins from going from three-hole hitter on opening weekend to out of the lineup or nine-hole at best in March to now being arguably Tech's hottest hitter, and in fact, I think he is Tech's hottest hitter. I would have said Justin Henry Malloy, the former Commodore, who had been so, so good for Tech. I mean, rock solid the last 2 months. He didn't have a great ACC tournament. But if you told me that Jenkins was back hitting five-hole after getting knocked out of the lineup in March, that would have been a really good sign, a positive turn for Tech, because he's a very talented hitter. And honestly, if you told me Justin Henry Malloy was going to be hitting cleanup and was Tech's most trusted hitter for the last 2 months of the season, I would have been really excited about that as well. So I think those are the two biggest surprises. And then I suppose when you've got a true freshman catcher hitting three-hole, that needs to be somewhat of a surprise, although – Kevin Parada came in. He was the highest-rated high school player not to sign in the high school class of 2020. And so it's funny. It almost feels like he's in a separate category of freshman. He's been so solid all year long. But I'm not sure I'm surprised by that. He got moved up to the three-hole within the first few months of the season or first few weeks of the season.
Justin Henry Malloy, really beloved player by his Vanderbilt teammates and fans. A lot of folks were sorry to see him go. Corner guy who really wanted his shot to play third after playing a lot of first base at Vandy last season and hitting pretty well. What's it been like not only watching him play this season, but interviewing him and getting his point of view on his time at Vanderbilt as he switches to what's honestly a very similar school and a similar program that's trying to follow where Vandy's at?
No, I think the parallels are on the mark. I mean, I think you're talking about two schools that academically consider themselves near the top of their respective conferences. And I think the other parallel you have is Nashville and Atlanta. And as Vandy fans know, as Tech fans know, you know, Justin Henry is technically a New Jersey kid, but, I mean, he's just south of New York City. So he considers himself a city kid. I think that's one of the reasons why he wanted to make the pivot. If he was going to leave Nashville, at Atlanta was a desirable location. And I think seeing Georgia Tech's success in 2019, albeit short-lived in the postseason, they were still the number three national seed 2 years ago. So I think those are the two things that kind of jumped out as far as him wanting to come to Tech if he was going to make a change. And then from a personality standpoint, you know, to be honest with you, that 2019 team for Georgia Tech included a lot of vocal leaders, a lot of big clubhouse presences. And I think just by losing all of that and by losing a whole year of COVID in 2020 and by having such a young lineup, he's really filled, I don't want to call it a void, but he's been a welcome addition from a leadership standpoint. Mm-hmm. You know, obviously Luke Waddell is a huge part of that, you know, a fourth-year shortstop for Tech. But Jahan, you know, from a personality standpoint, probably a little more extroverted than Luke as far as leading the group. And so I think, again, he has surpassed my expectations offensively, and I think mine were pretty high. I mean, I think Vanderbilt saw it for 2 years. The guy knows how to work in the bat, controls the strike zone very well. The biggest development for him these last couple months is he's all of a sudden started hitting for some serious power. Now, again, he struggled in the ACC tournament last week in Charlotte, but prior to that, his OPS was over about, I think, 1,100 the final 2 months of the regular season, so you know, the guy's been a huge addition. And again, you know, he's got a great smile. And I think, you know, he has nothing but love and respect and fond memories of his time at Vanderbilt. So I think for him, you know, he's excited to get a chance to kind of, you know, have it come full circle. And with the year he's had, there's, you know, I think he's going to have a chance to play pro baseball and hear his name called sometime in July.
17th most walks in Division I, the least surprising Justin Henry Malloy stat. He even did it last year in the shortened season for Vandy, so you're spot on there. Talking to Wiley Ballard, Georgia Tech baseball broadcaster. Wiley, what do you think pitching, specifically starting pitching, looks like this weekend for Tech, and where does Marquise Grissom Jr. fit in?
Oh, that's a great question. And the ACC tournament, again, made the semifinals, which with the ACC tournament format, you just have to win that one game in pool play if you finish as a top four team. So a little different than the SEC, where you can play a game or two that doesn't count. With that said, the starting pitching last week, they didn't have a single starter finish four complete innings in three games. They had Dalton Smith go three plus, maybe three and a third. Brant Herter went two and a third, and Grissom was the longest at three and two thirds. I feel confident that you're the two starters that are going to go first for Tech, going to be Brant Herter and it's going to be Marquise Grissom. Now, what order is that going to be in? I don't know. You know, they're two very different pitchers. Brant in his fourth year of college baseball, a big, tall, thick, sturdy left-hander, you know, who has been sort of Tech's most consistent starter this year. In fact, he was lights out the last 3 weeks of the regular season, but just didn't have his command against Louisville. And then you got Marquise Grissom, who's a little bit of an X factor, you know, made his debut in mid-April. He missed the first half of the season with injury, so they've been slowly kind of getting him built up. He went 5 1/3, a season high against Miami about 2 weeks ago. And against NC State, you know, and this was, I think, really showed the coaches and as well as the rest of his teammates. Against NC State in Charlotte, which was a unsurprisingly NC State heavy crowd, he got the start in the ACC semifinal, and he struck out the first three hitters in the first inning. They were all three, you know, all ACC, I think two first-teamers and a second-teamer that he punched out. So from a hostile environment, you know, bright light space, you know, I'm not going to sit here and say he's Kamar Rocker with what he did a couple years ago, but I think you have some feel just given some of that, you know, Major League DNA, his father being a World Series champion with the Braves in 95, that the moment's not going to be too big for him. His biggest challenge is going to be pitching efficiently if he wants to go deep into the game. And I'd argue for Tech to have any shot of making it out of Nashville, they're going to need some better starts than what they got last week. They got some pretty good bullpen work last week, which has been another problem. But, again, I mean, the numbers speak for themselves. You know, there's no staff in the ACC that walks more hitters, and they've got the second highest ERA in the conference as well. So, you know, as big a challenge as Rocker and Leiter are going to be for Tech's offense, to me, I think if you had the number one concern from a Georgia Tech perspective is how do you try and pitch to this Vanderbilt lineup and keep them within reach, knowing you're going to face one of the top pitching staffs year in, year out in the country.
I bet Grissom versus Leiter Saturday would bring some eyeballs to that game.
Yeah,
that'd be a heck of a lot of fun. Wiley, last question for you here. The other Vandy transfer, Chance Huff, has gotten into a lot of games recently out of the bullpen, 19 appearances on the season. Where does he fit into the bullpen mix right now, and where would you expect to see him this weekend?
Well, you're definitely going to see him this weekend. He really has kind of played his way into kind of being one of those top three trusted arms in the Tech bullpen. I mean, I think the number one most trusted guy is Zach Maxwell, and you can scout the stat line with him. He's averaging more than one walk per inning, and he's averaging close to two strikeouts per inning. So, I mean, the name of his game is, can he strike out three guys before he walks four guys? You know, that's kind of how his outings go. But going back to Chance, stuff's never been the problem. You know, that's one of the reasons he found himself at Vanderbilt out of high school. I mean, he's got great stuff. It's a matter of being able to command it and not fall behind hitters. And he really earned some trust with the coaching staff. He had two big appearances in the ninth inning against Clemson on back-to-back days. Got his job done both times. Now, with that said, he's also had some hiccups. Carolina got to him pretty good 2 weeks ago in the final weekend of the regular season. And then he pitched against Louisville and gave up a home run in the 12th inning last week, although Tech was able to overcome that with two runs in the bottom half. But no, Chance is clearly, in my mind, one of the top three back end of the bullpen guys, along with Zach Maxwell and the Luke Bartnicki. And so, again, I think between Huff and Malloy, it's going to be, I'm sure, an emotional weekend for them. And they're eager for the opportunity to kind of pitch back on what was their home field.
I'm sure they're excited about it. I know the Vandy guys are excited about it, too. So we're looking forward to it. See if Vandy and Georgia Tech can match up on either Saturday or Sunday, and maybe even Monday as well. Wiley Ballard will be on the radio call for the Jackets this weekend. Wiley, thanks so much for doing this. Really enjoyed getting to know you and the team a little bit.
Yeah, Max. No, I'm thrilled to get a chance to go up to Hawkins Field. When Tech went there in 2013, I was back in the studio as the board operator, so I'm excited to see Nashville in person and get a chance to watch some really good, talented players on both sides.
Thanks so much to Wiley Ballard, Georgia Tech baseball broadcaster, for joining the podcast. You can follow him on Twitter at Wiley with a W, W-I-L-E-Y, _ Ballard, B-A-L-L-A-R-D. And looking forward to meeting him this weekend. He will be on the radio call for Georgia Tech baseball this weekend on WREK. And they can hit. They can swing it. And they've had some overperforming freshmen. Kevin Parada, I'm excited to see this dude in person. Freshman catcher. I have heard nothing but good things. And by the way, he and Vandy catcher Max Romero will be the two backstops this summer for my former club and my favorite summer league team, the Chatham A's of the Cape Cod Baseball League. So they'll have a catcher ready for the start of the season because somebody's not playing past this weekend. So don't have to call up any mid-major New England guys to catch a game week number one. They'll have to have somebody back up probably. But One of them will be there at least. So Kevin Parada and Max Romero will be playing summer ball together, following in the great legacy of Chatham A's catchers, started by Thurman Munson, Billy Brubaker, and Jacob Stallings. So we'll see both of those guys this weekend. Might not see Romero play at all since he's Vandy's backup behind C.J. Rodriguez. But looking forward to seeing Georgia Tech in person. They've been a fun story. And, of course, those two Vanderbilt connections, Justin Henry Malloy and Chance the pitcher Huff, will be at the Hawk. So I thought Wiley gave a really good summary of what those guys are about. And, I mean, if there's nothing we love more in NCAA baseball playoffs, it's showing players' famous athlete parents in the crowd. So how great would Jack Leiter versus Marquise Grissom Jr. be if Grissom gets that start on Saturday if they beat Indiana State, and those two would match up in the 1-0 game on Saturday night if Vandy and Georgia Tech both win on day one? That'd be a little bit of fun, huh? Finishing up, I want to say some thank yous to this week. As I said earlier, Vanderbilt's selection show party was totally normal. Fans were allowed. Media was allowed. We did in-person interviews with Tim Corbin and Dominic Keegan for the first time this year. So thank you to whoever made that decision. Josh Foster from Sports Information, Brooks Webb, Tim Corbin himself, Alan George, whoever it was from Vandy. Thank you, thank you, thank you for letting us do that. It felt so normal. Got to talk to some of the players again. Got to meet the student managers I hadn't met and got to say thank you to some of the freshman players who I had interviewed over the phone, but I still haven't met any of these guys in person because of COVID restrictions and distancing, which sucks because I love getting to know these guys right off the bat, but it felt totally normal. And as usual, the Vandy team was very stoic when their name was announced. A little bit of applause. I mean, not a ton of reaction as other things go down in the regional and the announcements come through, but the loudest player reaction of the whole thing was in the Arkansas highlight reel right at the beginning when they were announcing the top four national seeds. The third clip of the Arkansas highlight reel is Parker Nolan striking out against Arkansas last week, and all the players go, oh. That was very funny, and it shows you how much they love Parker Nolan. I can tell you that for sure. So that was the loudest player reaction of the whole time, which was very funny to me, but a very enjoyable day. And as always here on the Anchor Down podcast, on our lengthy weekly episodes, as our timeline gets set off a little bit because of postseason here, it's time for the Tim Corbin quote of the week. And this week, the Tim Corbin quote of the week was right here on 102.5 The Game, talking about Christian Little's cramp in his throwing arm that caused him to exit early in the SEC tournament. Here's Corbs on Darren Donick and Chase on Tuesday afternoon, as prompted by Darren McFarland, or as Tim Corbin calls him, D.
We're all guilty, and I'm certainly guilty, of our conversations with you throughout the course of the season of focusing in on, you know, Rocker and Leiter. And so I never really talked about the young man who I watched when you guys played Ole Miss down in Hoover, the freshman, Christian Little. I didn't know a lot about him, but I watched, you know, how he pitched. He looked really good. And, you know him, so I'm going to ask about him because these were just some of my observations. One, what happened in that, where something happened with his hand, but the emotions when you went out there. I mean, he just looks like a fiery, fiery competitor from afar. I'm asking you, Tim, because you know the young man. Tell us a little bit more about Christian Little.
Well, I'm getting to know more of him, too, because the reality is he hasn't been here that long. He's a 17-year-old freshman. He arrived on campus in January. He was supposed to be here in September, but because of COVID, the ACT that he signed up for seven times was canceled. Hmm. So, through Vanderbilt, you're not admissible until you take that test. So it was unfortunate because he had to stay back in St. Louis during the course of the fall. But what I like about the family and Christian is they never deviated from what they wanted to do. And this goes back to like 3 years when we started recruiting him and the conversations about potentially coming to school a little bit early, because what he wanted to do and what his parents wanted him to do is they wanted the college process to be part of his life. And so it was. But his journey here was a little bit different, and it wasn't easy, because you take any 17-year-old and even if they're the brightest kid at their school, coming to Vanderbilt, taking 15 hours is quite a turn of events. It's completely different. And that's what he was exposed to. And he was also exposed to a roster that knew nothing about him. So I thought he did a good job of blending in, staying quiet, kind of learning what was expected of him. There weren't a lot of blips. You know, if there's any blips, it's just the maturity that's learned within the program and understanding what to do and what not to do. But you're talking about a really good kid. You're talking about a kid that is wired right for competition. He's wired right to do well in school. He got through the spring, kind of unscathed from an academic standpoint. And then I think really when school ended, it was like a huge weight off his back. It was almost like, okay, now I can just play baseball. And I think what we're seeing is a kid now starting to get more comfortable in the competitive and baseball environment because that's all that's on his plate. And I was so glad he did well the other night. The second part of your question is what happened to him? He cramped up.
Okay.
And he cramped up in his arm and he cramped up in his body and he wanted to stay out there. He actually asked Brownie before I got out there if the trainer could come out and rub him down before he could touch a pitch. He said, we just don't have a masseuse table out here and don't have the ability to do that. So I think we're going to have to take you off the field. So we did, and he was kind of unnerved about that, but I like it. He performed so well.
No massage table on the mound for Chris Matarazzo to give Christian Little a roller on the mound at the SEC tournament. So that's your Tim Corbin quote of the week. Long episode. Hope you enjoyed it. Elton Pollock, Luke Martin, Wiley Ballard going around the Nashville Regional. So hope you learned something. I certainly did. Looking forward to seeing all these teams this weekend. TV broadcasts, I haven't even given you the full schedule yet, so shame on me. The TV broadcasters this weekend will be Mike Cousins, who I have always enjoyed on a variety of sports, especially college football. And I'm looking forward to hearing him and working with him for the first time, and Greg Swindell, who pitched at Texas and in the major leagues. So two broadcasters who Vandy hasn't had before this season, so looking forward to hearing some fresh voices, and I am excited to be on the television crew for these broadcast games, as I have been for national TV home games all year. We will be producing them out of the Vanderbilt control room, same place that all our SEC Network Plus broadcasts come out of. So really looking forward to that. First time that the Vanderbilt crew will be producing any postseason games in any sport. So it should be a lot of fun, and I will be part of the graphics and stats crew for that, as I was for the other home national TV games this season. So it could be a marathon of a weekend, hoping the weather holds up to keep us on schedule. But Indiana State and Georgia Tech at noon Central Friday afternoon. That game is online only on Watch ESPN. Then Friday night, 6 p.m. Central Time, Vandy and Presbyterian. That game is on the SEC Network. Saturday, Sunday, Monday, we know the game times. We don't know what channels they will be on. They'll be on various ESPN channels. And if nothing else, they'll all be streaming on Watch ESPN, but it just depends on what games are going on, when, what games they will want to show. And, you know, they want to show Vandy as much as they can. So the two teams that lose on Friday will play at noon Central on Saturday afternoon. That will be an elimination game, so someone will go home. Then Saturday night, the two teams that win Friday will play at 6 Central. So noon and 6 Central are the game times both Friday and Saturday. Then Sunday, things change up. The team that lost on Friday but wins the early game on Saturday will come back in an elimination game against the other 1-1 team that loses Saturday night. That game will be at 2 Central on Sunday afternoon, so a later start on day 3 on Sunday. Then the winner of that game will come back against the 2-0 team on Sunday night at 8 Central. So again, another late start for that one. If the team that has already lost wins that Sunday night game, there will be a Game 7. That would be Monday night at 6 Central. So if the team that's 2-0 wins that Game 6 Sunday, they are through. The regional is so confusing, but it's the same format as it's always been. Double elimination and you're out. Three teams will lose twice. One team will either lose once or not at all. That team is through. It could be as many as 7 games, and if a team loses their first game, they could end up playing 5 games in the series, while a team could win it with as few as 3. College baseball does not make it easy to understand some of this playoff stuff, but once you get down what a regional is, it continues to pop up over and over again in the conference tournaments and the College World Series, this same 4-team double elimination format, in and out, in and out, in and out. So thanks to all of our guests today. Thanks to everybody who helped set those interviews up. Looking forward to some great baseball this weekend. You've been anchoring down and listening up with me, Max Herz. This is the Anchor Down Podcast here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. We'll be right back.
Thank you.